Well, post-election, we're going to talk about your medical insurance, your health and medical insurance, or what some people call health insurance. We're going to talk about your medical insurance and your medical care with Twyla Braze, president of the Citizens Council for Health Freedom, in podcast 777. Well, Twyla, I'm going to start with a simple question. I don't know about you, but I do not drink the tap water in my town. We're going to talk about health and all that and medical insurance and everything else in this podcast, but a lot of people don't realize that the water that they are drinking is not good for them. For one thing, for me, it is the taste, and then you have the possible pollution from decades ago, toxins that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless, and we all spend a lot of money on bottled water. Some of us buy two or three cases at a time, carrying it in from the car, upstairs, and so on. But there is a solution to this. So my friend Joe Berg was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water with the Water Butler water purification system. And I'm going to tell you about it. First of all, you check out masterplumbermn.com. That's masterplumbermn.com. They can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever. Here's their number, 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328. If you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, this is a message especially for you. It is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. They can put something in under your sink. They can put up a huge system that operates in your whole house. It's affordable. 68 years of experience with plumbing, so they're not going to be out of their element there. 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328. 763-286-8328. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Visit MasterPlumberMN.com. End your dependence on bottled water forever today. I've known Twyla for a long time. I don't know how long we've known each other, but we've been doing interviews and talking about what Twyla has disciplined me to say, medical insurance and medical care over the years. And obviously, with the loss of the House, there is going to be some changes in terms of the legislative priorities for what was originally, I guess you could say, an ACA repeal. And so we're going to talk about that. But you just wrote a letter to the president. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Right. We wrote a letter. We sent the letter to the president, and it's a coalition letter. And so by coalition, I mean that it's on our letterhead. It's a CCH Freedom letter. But it is co-signed by 37 other organizations around the country. Wow. And what this letter, there are 40 signatures, there are 37 other organizations, so a total of 38 organizations. And what this letter does is it lays out for the president why we want him to act and what he can do to act to bring healthcare freedom back for senior citizens in this country. And so a lot of people don't understand the fact that back in 1993, when the Clintons were in charge, they made a decision to hook Social Security and Medicare enrollment together. Mm-hmm. Even though there's no law, there's no rule, there's nothing. They didn't even do it by executive order. And so today, you cannot get your Social Security benefits unless you are enrolled in Medicare.
At what? And 60 retirement?
At 65.
Okay.
Yep, at 65. And so that's not a law, and people should be able to stay out of Medicare and still get their Social Security benefits, because after all, they worked all those years of their life and they had this money taken out of their paycheck, and now they're supposed to be able to get it back, right? But when the Clintons were in...
Right. I was going to ask, what does it usually cost for Medicare? And it comes out of the Social Security benefits, so what does it usually cost?
Well, the whole FICA, as it's called, which combines all those together, both Social Security and the payroll tax, which is to pay for Medicare, that is basically seven and a half from the employee and 7.5 from the employer. And you feel that 7.5 in particular, or both parts of it, when you are self-employed or you contract out, and then you have to pay the entire 15% on your own.
Right. No, I mean, how much do they take out of a person's Social Security to get them signed up for Medicare once they're 67 or whatever it is?
I'm sorry. So Medicare Part A, which is hospitalization, is so-called free because it's your payroll taxes all your working life that is paying for that. And then there's Medicare Part B, where you pay 25% of the cost in premiums, and taxpayers pay 75% of the cost through taxes. So when it comes to an amount that you're that's being taken out of your Social Security, it's being taken out of it for Medicare Part B.
No, but I mean, when you actually sign up and you're retired, and you get how much do you pay a month out of the Social Security? The person's benefit is cut according to they have to take the Medicare out of that. Well, how much is that if they're living on $1,000 a month? What is taken out?
I'd like to say that I had that answer at the tip of my tongue, but I did not.
I would be surprised if anyone has. Basically, people need to understand. So they sign up for benefits from Social Security, and then at a certain point, Social Security demands that they take Medicare, and that's going to cut into your Social Security benefits because they charge you for that at some point and at some number. We don't know what you're saying, 25%, so whatever that is.
I just want to be clear. I would say there's four different kinds of Medicare. Medicare Part A, which is hospitalization. Medicare Part B, which covers like doctor's visits and physical therapy and that sort of thing. Medicare Part D, which is drug benefit.
Oh.
And then there's this thing called Medicare Part C, which is Medicare Advantage. And if you original Medicare, you will pay for B and D. If you take original Medicare, everybody gets A, and they don't pay anything extra for it because they paid all their life through payroll taxes.
Right.
But if you get original Medicare, which lets you go wherever you want to go, whichever doctors you want to go, doesn't have drug formularies, all that sort of thing, if you do that, you pay Medicare B and Medicare D. But if you choose to go into Medicare Advantage instead of original Medicare, then you pay once, and it covers both B and D.
So
and you have a health plan which limits where you can go and what doctors you can have and which hospital you have to go to. So that's what Medicare Advantage is. It's the HMO version of Medicare versus original Medicare, which allows you to go anywhere, but then you have separate costs. You have B and you have D, and then you probably have supplemental to pay for what B and D won't cover.
It's so complicated. It just drives me insane. I don't know how people figure it out, especially when they're 95 years old. I don't know how they figure it out.
But my point is that people shouldn't have to take Medicare at all. And
right.
There are people who really don't want to take Medicare. But what the Clintons did was put this instruction into this manual in the Social Security Administration, which says you don't get your Social Security unless you get into the Medicare system. And I believe that the reason this happened is because Hillary's plan for healthcare in this country was to knit Medicare and Medicaid together and draw them together into the center and
right.
have it all run by health plans. And they didn't want anybody to be able to escape Medicare. And so they said, if you don't get into Medicare, we won't give you your Social Security. And knowing that most people really can't live without their Social Security because they've counted on it, they knew that that would trap them in.
So you're saying it's an executive situation. So you sent a letter to Trump saying you need to rescind that little piece of regulation in the Social Security Administration.
That's right.
I'm sure that will go over really big in Washington.
Well, it's as simple as that, right? So the Clintons put it in. They just put it in. No public notice, no public comment, nothing. It just got added. They had people who said, we want to keep our private insurance and we don't want Medicare. And they said, oh, no. And so they tied them together. So very much how they just did it, Trump could simply undo
it. Yeah.
Yep. Because it's simply executive. It doesn't require congressional approval. It doesn't require an act of Congress. It doesn't require rulemaking. It doesn't require any of that.
And this would give people the option of not having Medicare, any of the parts of Medicare, if they didn't want it, if they wanted to get their own health insurance.
It would do three things. One, it would give them a choice to get out. Maybe I should say that before things. Secondarily, it would right a wrong. because it's not right. It's not a law. It's not a rule. It's nothing. It was just an executive decision. So it would right a wrong. Third, it would probably create a brand new market of lifelong health insurance where seniors would realize they could keep their policies, and these policies would start to write policies for people, you know, into their golden years, right? And then the last thing that it would do is it would prevent Medicare for All. It would be a hedge against Medicare for All, because if you can get out, you can also get out of Medicare for All.
Right.
So for those who want to give us a socialized healthcare system called Medicare for All, if you are actually free to get out from it, then that makes it more difficult to impose.
Now, there's two things I want you to talk about. First of all, I want to talk to you about what CCHF does. And then I want you to talk about the book. But let's talk about what you do, because I know as we speak, you're in the middle of a Give to the Max drive, and people can still contribute to your efforts. So and actually, we're speaking on the very last night of the drive. Yes. I should have sent you an email sooner. But so I want you to talk a little bit about what you do, and you've been doing it for a long time, and it has really helped, I think, to have people really understand the parameters of what is going on with medical insurance in this country and actual medical care.
Right. So what we do, we're a nonprofit 501c3 organization, so any donations would be tax exempt. And so in short, we protect patient and doctor freedom. We are trying to restore and protect patient and doctor freedom, which means that if we can protect it, and the more and better that we can protect it, the more that patients will have choices, that doctors will have autonomy in taking care of patients. They will be able to use all of their expertise without health plans, without the government telling them how to practice. We will be able to individualize and personalize care. It will be able to be customized, and it will become affordable, because we will go back to real insurance rather than these extraordinarily expensive health plans, which are telling doctors what to do. They're keeping all the money for themselves. They have the authority to deny you as a patient access to care just because they decide it's unnecessary or they decide it's experimental.
Right.
And they have the authority to do it. So you paid them all of this money in premiums.
And by the way, I just want to put, before you go on, I just want to interrupt you and say there are examples of commercially delivered market health, medical care and insurance, and it is cheaper. Yes?
Yes, okay. It absolutely is cheaper. I mean, there used to be something called indemnity or catastrophic coverage, where it was, you basically put the policy in a drawer and you forget about it because you're going to pay everything else up front in cash, and it's going to be a cash-based price because nothing's going to run through the insurance companies. So you don't have all those expenses of reporting to the insurance companies. The insurance company's saying, well, you didn't include enough data, so we're not going to pay the bill. And so now you got to go back and try and figure out what they want. And all of that costs an extraordinary amount of money. So that kind of insurance called catastrophic coverage or major medical insurance was very, very affordable,
so
highly affordable.
What about people that don't have any money to get health care?
So there will always be people who don't have money to get medical care, to pay for it on their own. And so there's always charity, but there's also things like direct payment, direct pay doctors, like we have at on the Wedge at jointhewedge.com, where these doctors don't take insurance and they don't take government, and for that reason their costs are really very inexpensive. And so a lot of people go, and of course they just do cash, check, or charge, and they develop a relationship with this doctor, and there's no insurance interference, there's no government interference, it's a direct relationship, and it's affordable. I remember this one doctor saying how the coffee at his office was more expensive than the electrocardiogram.
Wow.
Because the electrocardiogram was basically cost a dime to do an EKG, cost a dime. And so it was more expensive to keep the coffee running for all the patients that come through. And so, and then they have all these medications that are at a wholesale price. So like the doctor will buy 1,000 pills and then they'll just sell them at cost to the patients. That's what's possible in a free market situation where the third party payers are not involved, where government's not involved, insurance is not involved. And so even today when people have really high deductibles and they're looking at these deductibles, they've started to shop. And they've realized that if they can pay at a cash-based level, they can actually end up with more money in their pocket at the end of the day because they're never going to hit their deductible.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you're paying for the insurance, and then you have the deductible, so you're paying anyway. So, you know, it's a ridiculous situation with the way things are right now. So let's talk about what CCHF does. So, you know, people give you money. It's a tax-deductible donation. What is it that you do with that? What do you do?
So our whole aim is to stop socialized medicine in this country and to have patients and doctors be free to interact with each other on an affordable level, and to have charity not be a dirty word, but actually be something that is that happens in the medical system, because that it has always been the foundation of medicine, the mission of medicine. And so our concern is that we have moved away from the mission of medicine and we've moved into the business of healthcare, and it's very unfriendly for the patients. It's very expensive, and health plans and hospital systems are all making money off of patients and doctors today. So everything that we do is really looking at this and trying to get it at to bring patient and doctor freedom back. So some of our projects are the Wedge of Health Freedom, which is to bring the patients and the doctors together in an affordable way. And that's at jointhewedge.com. We fight for privacy because we say he who holds the data makes the rules. And so that we know that the health plans, the government are all gathering this data in order to profile the patient, profile the doctor, and to control the doctor's hands in the exam room through scoring them according to what outsiders think that they should be doing, and therefore depriving them of their rightful funds as a doctor and making it all more expensive.
This is the experience of going to the doctor and they're entering everything on a computer and talk while they're talking to you.
That's right. Another one of our projects has, we call it baby DNA, protecting baby DNA. And this is stopping the states from gathering the DNA of children at birth through the newborn screening program and keeping that DNA and giving it away to researchers. Mm. That's something that we're unique with. In addition to that, we are trying to give people alternatives away from the Affordable Care Act, away from the Obamacare exchanges. And so at the end of the day, even though Obamacare will probably not be repealed, we don't think that Congress has the guts to repeal it, right?
Well, it certainly won't be now, that's for sure.
No. Our whole plan is to empty the law of its power by making sure that patients and doctors are not under its control and under its authority. And that's part of what the wedge is meant to accomplish. It's meant to take doctors away from the contracts that control them and make care affordable for patients. And once, you know, I just wish people would understand how the health plans and the government are working together in a very complicit relationship, really developing a socialized healthcare system run through the government but by the health plans. And so that our whole plan is that doctors will stop signing these contracts with either of them and eventually drain these big entities of their power and bring the power back to the patient and the doctor. We're just trying to save healthcare in America.
Well, as long as we're talking about health insurance, we should talk about what happens when you get injured at play or at work, because the insurance part of it, workers' comp claims and everything else, is really a thicket that is very difficult to figure it out. And it might be a good idea to have somebody like John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates to help. This is a number that you should put aside because you never know when you're going to get injured. John is a great personal injury lawyer. Here's his number, 612-963-4629. It is true that an accident usually comes without any warning, even when you're having fun. And then comes the insurance, the forms and workers' comp, and your business or your employer may have different ideas about, you know, what you should get. And so you need a lawyer to negotiate all of this for you. 612-963-4629. John is meticulous. And I always tell stories about his clients. I've told you all kinds of them. I'm just going to tell you the most recent story is he had a client who was injured, and his employer told him, you're not hurt that bad. And he didn't call anybody, didn't do anything about it, and now he's got larger problems. So John is trying to figure out how to get this guy's life back. This is the kind of thing, and this is why you need a meticulous and a great personal injury attorney like John Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It'll be there. And remember this number, 612-963-4629. That's 612-963-4629. John Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. I do want to talk about the new Congress, and I want to talk about your legislative outreach and how that has been with the Republicans over the last, I don't know, what has it been, 4, 5, 6 years since they had a majority in the House and Senate. And yet, even with a Republican majority, they were unable to do anything about repealing the Affordable Care Act. And here we are. Now the Democrats have a majority in Congress. What's your take on the legislative future of these kinds of issues going forward?
I think that with the divided Congress as it is today, the likelihood is that very little will happen, particularly because I think that the House is so focused on President Trump. I think that perhaps one of the things I wish would happen is that the Republicans would figure out how this thing called uninsurable pre-existing conditions is really the centerpiece,
right,
core of socialized medicine. It's what every socialized medicine system in the country, in the world has. And so, you know, you're offered coverage for everything under the sun. But
what you really want is catastrophic coverage.
That's right. But I don't think that the Republicans really understand that by embracing coverage for pre-existing conditions, they are embracing socialized medicine. And they haven't figured, either they haven't figured it out or they haven't figured out how to talk about it. Because I do not believe that the majority of people in this country are willing to have the government control their doctor and the health plans impose that control on behalf of the government. That's really where this country is going, and I don't believe the American people really want their doctor under the control of outsiders. But that's exactly where they're moving.
Well, if you watched the congressional campaigns, you saw there was a lot of advertising in those key toss-up districts about health, quote unquote, health care. That's
right.
What a lot of it was, and you know, they had an opportunity to repeal it, the skinny health care repeal, whatever it was, which has been in the news lately, and mm-hmm. My understanding was that was not a great bill. So, I'm just wondering how we're going to get from how do the Republicans talk about this so it doesn't sound like they're taking away if they advocate addressing this. How do they talk about it so that it doesn't sound like they're taking away something from people who believe that they're getting something with the ACA, let's just say it that way.
So I think when it comes to uninsurable pre-existing conditions, they have to give something. But what they give should not be, have federal strings so that we're just exchanging one federal program called Obamacare with another federal program called the Republican version of Obamacare that looks different, right? It's still under federal control. So what they have to do is give them something. And what one thing that we would like them to give is to, one, encourage the states to go back to state high-risk pools without federal control over these dollars. And that's what states had. 35 states had high-risk pools for people with uninsurable pre-existing conditions. But at the end of the day, that's not good enough. What they really need to do is solve the pre-existing uninsurable condition problem. I mean, why do we not have, for instance, why do we not have uninsurable pre-existing home health conditions, as in your house, right? Or as in, or auto conditions, right? Why don't we have that? We don't have that because all of us own our individual car insurance policy. We own our individual home insurance policy. We own our individual whatever, renter's policy, whatever the kind of policy you want to come up with. But the reason that we have pre-existing uninsurable conditions is because we don't own our own health insurance policy, our own medical insurance policy. We don't own it. We depend on our employers. And then when we get sick,
oh, I see.
And then when we lose our job, then we lose our coverage, or we put children and their parents together into a family policy. The child gets, you know, leukemia, childhood leukemia, or they get juvenile diabetes, right? And then they have to leave. They have to leave as soon as they turn 26. And there they are, having to leave. Now, if we had a like pre-birth. If insurers offered a policy pre-birth to the parents to buy for their child before we even knew if it was a $1 million baby. Those are rare babies, but they're out there, right? Then it's a very inexpensive policy. And then the parents pay on it, and at the maturity of the child, they hand it over to the child, and the child now owns their own individual health insurance policy. They're not tied to their insurer. They're not tied to their employer. They're not stuck with a pre-existing condition. They're never going to leave a family policy or lose an employer-sponsored policy. And then this policy could actually go to the end of their life. This is part of what we want to do, you know, with the Medicare thing, is to let Medicare folks escape Medicare and keep a private insurance. And then we could have lifelong health insurance for people, just like they have, you know, other insurance that they take with
them. So what happened then with the House races? And why aren't Republican members outselling something like this? As in other words, here's our plan. Here's what we want. I didn't hear much about what Republicans wanted to do during this election.
Well, that's why I say that my concern is that they don't even understand that this pre-existing condition mandate is the core of socialized medicine. So they don't even, first of all, they don't understand it. Second of all, they just don't know how to talk about it. Third, maybe they're not willing to talk about socialized medicine. Maybe they're just not willing to go there. I mean, I don't totally understand why, but one of the things that I have said is we need to solve the pre-existing condition problem, not allow it to take the entire country into socialized medicine. But I think that the Democrats, when they passed the Affordable Care Act and they had that mandate, that was the core of Obamacare. That was the one thing that they knew that both conservatives and liberals would not want to get rid of. Because conservatives think it's compassionate, but it's not compassionate to go into socialized medicine.
So if I were to say to you, so what's wrong with socialized medicine? You know, you pay, it's a single payer thing. We get a card, and what's the big deal? Why is that such a bad thing?
It's such a bad thing because the government, we then take it completely out of the free market. We hand it over to the government, and they get to make the final decisions about what kind of care we can have, who we can have, how many doctors can be in any region, how many hospitals will be allowed to exist, what kind of procedures will be available or not. And, you know, unlike the Canadians who have 33 million right. people, we have 325 million people. Unlike the Canadians, where will we go? The Canadians come down to America when the wait is 2 years, when they're afraid that they're going to lose access to a vital function because it's just taking too long to get this thing repaired. Where will Americans go? Are we going to, and are we willing? Are we willing in a country of the free to no longer have freedom in medicine, no longer have the doctors deciding what to do, no longer have medical excellence, having people die while they wait? Are we willing to do that just to say that we've covered everybody, even though people don't get cared for? Because that's where we're going. That's what happens in every other country. They promise coverage, but they guarantee no access.
So what's the prognosis then for this particular issue over at least the next 2 years and the presidential election, in your view?
So I feel like over the next 2 years, perhaps not a lot will change. The Affordable Care Act will stay in place. People, because the penalty has been zeroed out, fewer people are likely to end up in the Obamacare exchanges. The people that are in the Obamacare exchanges will likely be those who have uninsurable pre-existing conditions, making it ever so costly for everybody else who that's the only place that they can go to get their coverage, which means that a lot of people will simply choose to go uninsured. I think that the health sharing organizations will continue to grow. And I think that the uninsured level will include lots of people who want to be insured, lots of people who used to be insured, but they're no longer willing to give up all this money to a health plan every year, year after year.
It's a tragedy and a travesty when you look at the amount of money that we have to spend for quote unquote health insurance. It is, if you want to know why the economy is struggling, and it is still struggling, it's an enormous amount of money for people to spend. You know, families, it's not unusual for them to be spending $1,200 or more dollars a month to for nothing, because you get nothing until you're sick, and then you still have to pay the deductible. So it's I think it's the worst thing that there is right now, and nobody ever talks about it because it's the third rail of politics now. Nobody wants the discussion.
I think you can look at the health plans. If you want to see where the money is, it's in the health plans. The health plans, just two examples. United Health Group, their stock has risen 1,400% since 2009, the year before the Affordable Care Act went in. There's another plan that's called WellCare. All it does is it's a managed care plan for Medicaid. Its stock has risen 4,000%. And the health plans are looking at profits in the double digits. And when they talk about, you know, their bottom line, they talk about how they are focusing on Medicaid and Medicare Advantage. That's the HMO version of Medicare. They're focusing on those two. They're building those two because they're just getting money hand over fistful. And it's coming from us. It's coming from taxpayers. It's coming from state programs where essentially the state is taking over the insurance function. It's called reinsurance. And every time any person, young, old, doesn't matter, in the health plan, anytime their expenses rise beyond $45,000 or $50,000, the taxpayers kick in 80% of the cost up to $250,000.
So the companies then aren't worried about
Not even being insurance companies anymore. Because once they get to $250,000, they've got their own reinsurance company beyond that that is insuring the health plan for those costs. So they aren't even insurers anymore. And so they're making so much money.
Now, I want to talk about the book very quickly. So the book is Big Brother in the Exam Room. And I think people should have this as a resource. And that's what I've said. Talk about the book a little bit.
So the book is indeed a resource. It really is eye-opening, and I've had physicians who have read it and told me, well, I thought I knew everything until I read this book. Now I realize there's so many things that I didn't know. But essentially what the book is, it's an expose of how the electronic health record is not what people think the electronic health record is. And the electronic health record is two things. It's a surveillance system for data entry, data reporting, profiling, and predictive analytics of the entire population. It is the development of a complete electronic dossier on everyone that ever sees a doctor in this country. The other thing it is a command and control system through which third parties, that would be health plans and government, are controlling the hands of the doctor. They are determining what the doctor can and cannot do. There are limits that the doctor, in order to order, has to find something in the electronic health record to order. It happens because there are fields and clicks and all of this sort of thing. And if it's not in the electronic health record, they can't order it. So this is a command and control system. It's a surveillance system. And what I like to say is it really is the socialization of the health data. And if you're going to socialize healthcare in this country, the easiest way to start is by socializing the health data system, because that's how you can control the doctors, take over the exam room, and do all the profiling and all the payment controls that are being used to take all the power away from the patient and the doctor, to use them, to make money off of them, and to control what happens in the exam room.
Isn't it amazing how efficient government is when they're taking away freedom?
Well, and that's what they'll say, is that we'll make it more efficient. But you just watch the doctors. They are spending twice as much time with the electronic health record because that's the only way that they can get paid. They're spending half the amount of time with the patients. And they're letting non-physicians use the electronic health record to diagnose and treat patients. I don't think patients even realize this, that this is another way to get rid of the only one who has medical training, which is the doctor, and use the inexpensive non-physicians to give non-excellent care, non-medical care. I mean, there are good non-physicians, right? But they're still not physicians.
We're talking about nurse practitioners. Okay.
Yeah, nurse practitioners, right. PAs.
Right.
There's even a possibility that you could have medical assistance at some point if we get to the point where we get to protocol medicine, and that's all it is protocol medicine. Anybody just looks in, figures out what the protocol is, issues the diagnosis, issues the treatment, and there you go. So I actually talked to a doctor who listened to two PAs, physician assistants, talking to each other in a cafeteria. He was just happen. He could just overhear the conversation. And one PA said to the other, so basically, what are you going to do? What's your next step? And the other PA said, you know, I don't know. I haven't figured that out. I'm not sure if I'm going to do anything else. He goes, well, why don't you, the other one says, why don't you go into the ER, into the emergency room? And the other PA goes, yeah, I don't think I'm qualified for going into the emergency room. And the other PA says, well, no, it's not a problem. All it is protocols. All you have to do is follow the protocols. Now, I'm an ER nurse. The last thing you want is just people who have no medical training in the emergency room in crisis situations following protocols.
You know, this was supposed to be an uplifting interview, and this is turning into a horror show, is what this is.
Well, I'm not sure why you thought it would be uplifting. The only thing I can say is for your listeners in Minnesota, we know that the Republicans plan during this next coming session was going to be to take away the medical privacy rights of people in the state. We have the strongest.
This is the Republicans.
In the that's right. Well, they tried to take it away last session, and we convinced them to wait, and they had a committee and everything. But now with the
okay, but I this is a sidebar. This is a sidebar, but I got to ask you. What are they thinking? Why would they even consider that if they're, and I understand it if it's a Democrat. I understand it if it's like, look, we're trying to, I get where they're trying to go, and I'm not necessarily criticizing them because I understand what their objective is. Where does the Republican get off in getting, you know, trying to, you know, chip away at, or actually just knock down a privacy? I don't understand that.
Well, you just have to look at who the key lobbyists were. So the key lobbyists came from the Minnesota Business Partnership. It came from the Chamber of Commerce, right? It came from the healthcare industry.
The Chambers of Italian Fascism.
Researchers. And you know, and the fact of the matter is we have actually saved our privacy law because of some Democrats. So this privacy is really a bipartisan issue, and it's just a matter of who's in power and what do they feel about it and whether or not they're going to follow the lobbyists.
Okay.
So it's entirely possible that we could save it because we have Democrats on one side this time. So you never know.
Well, and they know that's an important issue, especially with younger demographics. So you are in the, you're just closing down the final minutes of Give to the Max. So I should probably let you get back to calling your donors.
Well, I appreciate you spending the time. I appreciate anybody who's listening to this podcast, considering us as someone that they would like to keep in contact with, donate to, buy the book.
Buy the book. There's a banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com.
And sign our petition to President Trump to free the seniors to have their own insurance, to have their own private insurance and not have to go on to Medicare, not have to lose their Social Security. Everyone who is listening to this is going to be a senior unless they die early. And that kind of
Seems to be the only way out.
That's right. That kind of freedom is so important, and I think it would be great for everybody to just go to cchfreedom.org, where you can donate, where you can sign the petition, and where you can buy the book.
Thank you, Twyla Braze. Good luck. Thank you. Well, you guys know I hate my printer just as much as I hate health insurance and paying for quote-unquote health insurance, Twyla. And the printing needs of the Bob Davis podcasts are handled by Cartridge World, because guess what? Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. And Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Mine print better than those factory cartridges I buy from the big box retailers. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. 763-420-6632. That's 763-420-6632. Or you can click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks once again to Twyla Braze of the CCHF, Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and the Google Podcast app. And I do appreciate the likes, the shares, and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 777.